Okay, let's, we're missing a couple, but let's go ahead and wind up the rubber bands and get going on this one. Martin?
Christopher is presenting.
Yes, good afternoon. Next paper is agenda paper 3 about the accounting for different aspects of restructuring Greek government bonds. In the May meeting, the Interpretations Committee made the tentative decision not to add this issue to its agenda. The proposed rejection wording explains why the current standard leads to derecognition of Greek government bonds, and regarding the GDP-linked securities, it provides some guidance on the classification. This paper covers both topics, and we are starting with derecognition. 8 comment letters were received, and all of them agreed with the derecognition of Greek government bonds, partially using different arguments. However, 4 respondents requested that more guidance should be provided on derecognition in the context of debt restructuring in general. They note that restructuring has become a significant and frequent issue in the current economic environment. The staff think that the outcome of the ISB's big derecognition project shows that this issue is difficult, controversial, and encompasses a large topical area. Ultimately, the project was finished without further clarifications on the rules for derecognition, only with additional or with new disclosure requirements. Developing a new derecognition model for financial instruments goes beyond the type of issue that is usually addressed by way of interpretation. However, the committee might consider referring this issue to the ISB. For this topic, there are 3 questions to be answered by the committee. You can find them on page 6. And with that, I hand over to you for discussion.
Comments? Reactions? Andrew?
Not on that particular issue, but on something else in the paper and the comment letters, but is it?
I thought we discussed the derecognition first and then the GDP-linked securities.
Okay.
I had another point on the derecognition agenda decision, not the one you've just raised about wider guidance on debt restructuring. Okay, well, there's reference in the paper to the KPMG comment letter, which is attached, and I don't want to derail this agenda decision because it's reached absolutely the right decision in terms of derecognition of these bonds. But I'll just come back to the point that's raised in the comment letter about how to analyse paragraph 17A. Because I wasn't entirely sure I understood the staff's response to that comment letter. Because if you look at the draft agenda decision, on page 11, I've got 2 issues in relation to this. If you just look at the wording of the agenda decision, on page 11 it says, the committee noted that in order to determine whether the cash flow entitlement is extinguished, it's necessary to assess the changes against the notion of expiry of the rights to the cash flows in paragraph 17A. That's fine. And then at the end of the agenda decision, it says, the committee noted, however, that derecognition is required under both approaches, extinguishment under paragraph 17A or substantial modification. And the point is that I don't think there are 2 approaches. There's 1 approach, and I don't think paragraph 17A is just a question of legal form, which, if I understand the analysis in the staff paper, might be suggesting that expiry is just a question of legal form. I don't think it's as simple as that. I think you have to look at the substance of what's going on, and therefore modification of terms would also be relevant in assessing whether you've got expiry under 17A. But I think there's 1 approach, not 2. But maybe I haven't understood the staff's response to that in the paper, because I did struggle with it a bit.
Well, I think the original decision was kind of a belt and braces approach to always get to the same conclusion without making legal judgment about the exact terms of the haircut. And considering that respondents demanded more guidance, we would do the opposite by stating that only one approach leads to derecognition and not providing guidance on other approaches, which were also asked in the original submission.
I'm not sure I fully follow that.
I'm
not sure that's responsive to Andrew's question.
It's easiest to look at the little chart we did on page 9, but ultimately, we don't say that expiry is a purely legal thing and you can't have the extent of change involved there. What we are saying is you make an analogy, because there's no guidance on the asset side, to the liability side. The analogy that you now pick is liability side, which says it's all about substantial different terms, whether those substantial different terms result from an exchange or modification doesn't matter, and the liability guidance doesn't narrow it down, but it says either way you account for it as an extinguishment, and then you can see how extinguishment is used, which is not the language used on the asset side, which is expiry. But extinguishment is only on the liability side, that extinguishment can be expiry, discharge, or cancellation. All that we are saying is we don't need to opine on this. It's clear that no matter what you try to fit it under, it's extinguishment as a consequence either way, and that means you need to derecognize. And if you want to hold a view that you get there under 17A, well, that's what you might do. If you take a modification view, that's what you would do as well. But that difference is not relevant for the outcome, and so why should we opine on something that is not relevant for the outcome?
Well, I'm fine with that. I don't want to engage in wordsmithing, but so you're not saying, this is a question, you're not saying expiry is just a question of legal form? Because
no, definitely not. It's all about the issue here is really how substantial different are the terms. That's the question.
Well, I agree with that.
Yeah, but, okay. And we say, how we then call that expiry or modification, it doesn't matter. It's all about substantial difference of the terms.
Let's see. Laurence and then Charlotte.
Relating to the derecognition, well, yes, I was agreeing with your question 1 and 2. With the wording, the addendum rejection, I think on page 12, that the paragraph that starts by the committee noted its analysis used as a starting point, the assumption in submission that part of the principal amount of the old debt, the Greek government bonds, that was exchanged, etc., etc. All that paragraph creates a little bit of confusion about whether you assess portions only or whether you need to exchange for the whole instruments. And it's an ongoing question that comes for when you have restructuring and so on. And here it is unclear what you're trying to say and what is the message you are trying to convey with this paragraph. So my question is this needed for the whole rejection? Is this paragraph needed, or can we cross it out? Because I do believe it creates confusion.
So what we did not think was necessary for this conclusion is to take a view on whether if you have a change in having one bond to start with and then fragmenting that, and you get different types of consideration, but it also clearly in this case includes partial forgiveness of the loan, because there is a clear chunk for which you don't get anything in return. So it's really staggered by, for that many percentage points of the original loan, you get that in exchange, or whatever you want to call it. For that other chunk, you get that, and for a pretty large chunk, you don't get anything. So if you want to have a discussion whether that could be seen as you have now 3 or 4 proportional parts, which could then be individually evaluated, is one debate you could have. Do you need that debate? We don't think so, because we say even if you went there, you don't get partial derecognition, which means that you never get it. Because clearly if you look at the whole thing, it becomes more uneven what you actually have before and after. So that's why we clarified at the last meeting. We tested first on the basis of what would have the best chance to achieve partial derecognition. Well, if that's a no, the rest is also a no, and we don't even need to go into that debate.
Yeah, but by doing so, you may imply that it might be appropriate in some other circumstances to look at trenches. Is this the message we want to convey?
Well, I don't know. You need to have the discussion. If we want to opine on it, you need to have the discussion whether it would be a disproportionate slicing. And I can only say, well, if I had a normal loan outside of a troubled debt restructuring context and I repay 30% of the whole nominal amount, including accrued interest, and 70% is exchanged for something else with a retained interest, then probably I could evaluate 30% will repay. That's gone. Derecognition at 70%, I need to test for the possible transfer if that is involving a transfer.
Or do you reassess for the instrument as a whole? That's my point.
Yeah.
Well, but Laurence, I thought the point was, and correct me if I'm wrong, Martin, that we reached the conclusion that in this circumstance, partial derecognition was not appropriate.
Yeah.
We didn't say it might not be appropriate somewhere else. We just said we started with this assumption and concluded as a consequence of that that partial derecognition was not appropriate. So I don't read this paragraph as foreclosing that possibility in other circumstances, just in this one.
It's, again, it's something that is not decision relevant here. Obviously, if you want to have general guidance on how you can slice and dice something that it still meets the requirements of being subject to separate evaluation of the different parts that you try to decomponentize into, that is a different question, and that applies outside of the context of this one. So again, you would have to have a fairly different open debate about another issue. I'm just concerned that we inadvertently create unintended consequences for, say, these kind of assessments outside of this context as an unnecessary side effect of opining on this question.
Yeah, but by writing the way you write, it opens the door for saying, in other circumstances, you may have to look at partial.
I think we need to be very clear that if we say we do not opine on that or that can remain open, that what it means, it is not prejudice either side, that you can or can't do it. We just do not comment on it. So it's the same if the court says it's not decision relevant for the matter at hand, we leave it open. That doesn't mean someone was right or wrong, it was acceptable or not acceptable. It's just not required.
Do others think that this language creates a... I'm struggling for the word. An opening one way or another that didn't already exist, or that it somehow inappropriately closes off things? In other words, do others share Laurence's concern? Okay. Charlotte?
Yeah, I think I have concerns whether this issue should be dealt with.
Oh, I'm sorry, I bit it wrong.
So whether it should be dealt within a rejection notice or not. I understood the discussion last time, the very narrow question, this specific trade, it was clearly that it should be derecognised no matter what gap you looked at it under. But the issue of looking at a modification, when is a modification same as an extinguishment for an asset side, it just isn't dealt with. And I think the sort of the chart you draw and the sort of conclusion in that third paragraph is a sort of interpretation of the gap, which I think needs to have more analysis. And for example, my question on this one is, if in order to be an if something that is a substantial modification has an extinguishment, is something that is a legal extinguishment which has no modification or minimal modification, is that still an extinguishment, or is there a in substance requirement there, for example? Is it symmetrical in any way? And I don't actually think it's a broad issue to the degree that it requires it reopening of the whole of the derecognition project, which I wouldn't really look forward to. But I think it could be dealt with here. And I think the other point that was when we discussed previously was it isn't necessarily clear that a transfer back to the issuer is automatically not in the later paragraph and is automatically in, isn't in 17B. It isn't clear whether in this case this is a transfer back to the issuer because some of the bonds were actually issued by an agency of the Greek government and not the specific Greek government. So I think that's why we had the question of it still, even if you assessed it under the transfer criteria, it still works.
I recall those were the reservations you had first time around.
Yep.
Fabian?
What seems clear from the comments received is that there is a need for further guidance, and we believe that what poses problem is the word expire, and that word may be understood in different ways. We, along the lines of Charlotte's comment, we believe that there is no need to reopen the whole derecognition project, and also with respect to the proposal in the staff paper to refer to the board, since the board said they didn't want to reopen IS 39, I think there's no need to go that way. Because the issue seems to be quite narrow and really deals with that, the meaning of expire, I think they, the committee should deal with the issue.
But not necessarily in this. You're saying we should bring that up as a separate issue to the committee. It would seem to me we wouldn't want to delay this while we take two or three meetings to debate the meaning of the word expire. So, Charlotte, that wouldn't necessarily get to your objections, though. It would, I guess, maybe help, but...
I think it would have to then be one of the objections and say, actually, we're going to look at the broader issue somewhere else.
But we haven't made that decision yet.
Yeah, I know what I was saying, rather than just rejecting it, then giving the sort of analysis in there. I mean, I think the issue of whether something is an expiry when it's a modification is a lot wider than just Greek bonds. I mean, and it's a lot wider than just a financial crisis. It happens the whole time. So.
Yep. Let me put the question in separate bits. Andrew, you're reaching for the button. You want to come in first?
Well, I was just wondering if you know, if you could add us. I'm a bit nervous about any significant revisions to this agenda decision, having got to where we got to, but I just wonder whether you could add something at the end that the committee agreed to discuss in future, whether, you know, there's something to do on a wider front.
Well, that was going to be the second half, so you're reading my mind. First half would be, who objects to the agenda decision as written? One. Okay. I guess this is a three-part question. Would the committee like the staff to bring back, in response to ESMA's request, an analysis of what a committee project exploring the notion of expiry, I'll get my tongue tied up here, and seeing whether there's anything that the committee can do with that. I'm not certain whether we can, Fabian, but I...
Can I just clarify, is that exploring that notion with relation to liabilities, assets, or both?
Well, given it's on both sides, you would struggle to only tackle one side, right?
Well, if you believe it's a legal issue, yes. I mean, we've been looking at it in terms of, you know, IAS 39, paragraph 17A. The question is on the asset side. But I think 17A was originally written for liabilities. So I'm just trying to figure out which we might talk about.
The answer to that question is I don't know.
Okay.
We haven't done the work.
Yeah. That's fair. I apologize. Assets.
Yeah. So who would like us to bring something back on this subject? Okay, does that mean the rest of us do not want it? Or who would object to bringing something back on this topic? Or Scott, do you have a third wording?
No, I wouldn't object. I mean, I think if ESMA is suggesting that there is a need for more guidance here, then we ought to be willing to talk about it.
That would be my view. So unless I see somebody who just so hates this idea that we don't do it, that we'll bring it back to you. Probably not next month. I think it needs more thinking than that. Third part of the question, then is whether or not that decision to talk about this subject subsequently needs or ought to be placed in this agenda decision.
Scott's shaking his head no,
and my inclination is that's a separate decision that we made in response to a request from ESMA.
I don't think our decision to talk about this further should be in this agenda decision because it might suggest to some that
I agree.
We weren't really finalizing this agenda decision.
Okay, well, we will not then change it. Let's think, Michael, about, we ought to tell the world that we plan to do something.
And yes.
That's probably part of our work in process, and how do we announce that and update?
Yeah. Yeah, we can put that in the work in progress section.
Part of
update.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, gentlemen, moving on.
Yep. Yes, the second issue in this paper is the definition of a derivative and how this applies to the GDP-linked securities, which were part of the restructuring of Greek government bonds. The key question is whether GDP is a non-financial variable that is specific to a party to the contract. If not, it would be a derivative at fair value, PL. If yes, another financial asset category has to be found. The committee did not answer this question, but provided some guidance. Five respondents suggested that the committee should add this issue to its agenda or recommend to the ISB to perform further work. The staff note that this issue was on several previous occasions considered by the IFRIC and the ISB. One unsuccessful attempt was to remove the criteria non-financial variable specific to a party to the contract in the annual improvements project 2007-2008. Out of 61 respondents, 33 did not support and 28 objected to the proposal. Even if changes to IAS 39 were required, the committee already considered that IFRS has a new classification for financial assets. What does this mean under IFRS 9? The GDP-linked security for the holder does not only have payments which are principal and interest and are therefore... They do not only have, so it would be fair value PL, has to be always. The staff recommend not adding this issue to the committee's agenda, but we think that the committee should recommend that the ISB perform further work on the definition of a derivative. For this topic, there are three questions to be answered again, and you can find them on page 8.
Comments, Andrew?
I'm just wondering now whether ESMA's comment relates to the wider issue of non-financial variables specific to the party or whether it relates to these specific GDP-linked securities, because if it's the latter, I see no merit in looking further at the GDP-linked securities. I mean, first of all, unless you're very optimistic, they're not going to have much value anyway. And secondly, if anybody wanted to do anything else other than fair value through P&L account for them, I think, as I said last time, good luck to them, because you know, you've got to estimate cash flows going umpteen years, there's issue of call options and stuff like that, so any amortized cost accounting gets horrendous. So I certainly wouldn't want to look any further at these particular securities, but I wasn't sure whether that was what ESMA was recommending.
ESMA especially asked for a guidance of non-financial variable, not specific to a party to the contract.
That is not, however, a new issue. It's been around for quite some time. Doesn't mean we shouldn't, it's just an observation. Charlotte?
I'd agree with, I'm not reopening this issue for the GDP specific securities because for the reasons given, I do think we should recommend it that the board look at the non-financial variables again. I don't know what traction that would get or whether it would just, whether that would actually do it, where it would be on their agenda.
John?
Yeah, I mean, I agree not to add it to the agenda, although I do agree with recommending the ISB takes it on. Just on the wording of the agenda decision, I think the second point could confuse that IFRIC is actually concluding it's not a derivative. That's actually an assumption made in the agenda decision rather than a conclusion. So I would be uncomfortable concluding it is not a derivative because I think one could conclude that it is a derivative.
Did we conclude that it wasn't a derivative, or did we conclude that whether or not it was, it wasn't?
We said 39. Because of what we have emphasized here, there's a bone with a little bite marks on it already, don't touch it now again. We say if you view it as a derivative, then the answer is clear, it's WPL. If you were to not view it as a derivative, then we still at least can narrow it down that amortized cost is clearly not available, and then Andrew emphasized what joys you have if you even try that for sale, because in the background you still need to do an amortized cost calculation for the income statement. So good luck with that one. But we just said, so it's either fair value PL or at least we narrow it down, but we can clearly say everybody who had any appetite to use amortized cost, that's not possible under any view you take.
Joanna?
I agree with the staff recommendation, and I'm happy with the rejection wording. Just in terms of referring it to the board, do we actually want to make a recommendation to the board that they address the issue, or simply refer the fact that we've had these comments through? Because I would prefer the latter, and then make, like, do we really want to make a recommendation? And Patricia's pulling a face at me, which implies she doesn't like what I'm saying. But to me, I'm not sure I want to make that recommendation because it implies that it should be up there in the priority. I'd just like to say, hey, by the way, we got these comments. Think about what you might want to do with them.
I'd ask the question a little bit differently. This problem has proven intractable since IFRS 4. And just referring it to the board and saying this problem is still intractable, or really hard to deal with, I'm stumbling, doesn't actually help the board very much in thinking about it.
Make a recommendation that please think about it doesn't help much.
Pardon me? I'm sorry, I didn't hear you, Joanna. No,
Making a recommendation saying we recommend you address it doesn't help them either.
Well, that's exactly my point. We usually, when we recommend something to the board, we also say, and we think this is the answer.
Yes.
And I'll be doggone if I know what the answer to this one is. Martin may.
I would have a game plan for the board, but that's more, maybe it's more promising or successful if insurance has hopefully then moved on at some stage, so the IFRS 4 issue is becoming a different platform to look at what is out there, the new definitions and so on. And also once we know where classification measurement has finally come out, so how much of still obviously the proposal then embedded derivative accounting remains, and then you might also think at that time to wrap it up with embedded derivative accounting for non-financials and try to frame the discussion that way, because if you fragment it, you probably run into the same trouble that you ran into. I can only say from my experience, if you get 60 comment letters or comments, that's already quite a bit. And as a board, you usually get 200, 300 even, but even 60 is quite a bit, so it's more than you sometimes might get on some lower key committee decisions. And if it is all against, it's only a varying degree of how much against that makes it extremely hard to continue from that starting platform.
So I take Martin's advice to be it would be premature pending resolution of the insurance project and the definition of an insurance contract. We get that solidified, and then we see where recognition and measurement turns out. So
it gives me at least a different playing field. I don't end up right in the same trench after the first minute.
Thanks for the encouragement. Okay, I'm going to propose that we not take something to the board. We've already told, we already have our three resident board members who've been listening, and the guys on FI, so. Then the question, I guess, is on the agenda decision itself, gentlemen. You want to put that question now, that that agenda decision is on page
8, 9, 16, the agenda decision, yep.
Starts on 15 on my document. You get a different page count on whether or not it's on a... Oh, okay. All right, comments on the agenda decision itself? John?
Apart from the one I've already made about the strengthening the fact that it is the assumption that it's not a derivative, just at the end, there's a comment that says the committee further noted that the issue also relates to a current IASB project, the limited review of classification and measurement under IFRS 9. I mean, clearly this issue is not being dealt with in that limited review under IFRS 9, so to make a comment that refers to it being a current project is potentially giving false hope to people that it's going to be dealt with in that project.
Yeah, we could take that out if the board
well taken. Yeah. Others? Subject to that suggested change, do I take it as given? Seeing no objections.
Thank you.
That's all she wrote?
Thank you.
Yep.